Let's get started. Joshua chapter 3. We'll get started right there. It's always good to be home. It's always good to be back in Indiana. Be away from the busy life of Lexington. It's good to be back in the slow country life again, that's for sure. You run into some hillbillies down there, but you don't run into many of them in Lexington. We'll get started in Joshua chapter 3. I want to read a couple verses to start out. We're going to be using our Bibles tonight, so have them ready. I know I can't say nothing, so we'll let the Bible say something. Let's start in verse 14. And it came to pass when the people removed from their tents to pass over Jordan, and the priests bearing the Ark of the Covenant before the people. And as they that bear the Ark were come unto Jordan, and the feet of the priests that bear the Ark were dipped in the brim of the water, for Jordan overfloweth all his banks all the time of harvest, that the waters which came down from above stood and rose up upon an heap very far from the city, Adam, that is beside Zeratan, and those that came down toward the sea of the plain, even the salt sea, failed and were cut off, and the people passed over right against Jericho. And the priests that bare the Ark of the Covenant of the Lord stood firm on dry ground in the midst of Jordan. And all the Israelites passed over on dry ground until all the people were passed clean over Jordan. Let's pray. Dear Jesus, thank you for this day you've given us there, Lord, to assemble in your house. Lord, I don't feel worthy to stand behind this pulpit, and Lord, especially to preach your holy word. But God, asked, Lord, you give me the words to say. It's nothing that I say. It's nothing about me, Lord. It's all about you, and I hope to give you the glory and honor. And God, asked, Lord, you just calm my nerves and help everyone to listen and be blessed by what they hear tonight. In your name I pray. Amen. Title tonight is Get Your Feet Wet. I was listening to this. I was telling my uncle that at work they started letting us listen to things as we worked. A lot of the guys listen to music and things like that. But I have a Bible program on my phone that actually reads it to you. So I've just started in Genesis, and I just started listening to it while I was at work. And this is honestly why I was at work is where this message came from. While I was listening to it. I read them verses right there that said that, and the feet of the priests that bear the ark were dipped in the brim of the water, in verse 15 right there. And if you know much about Jordan, I looked up some facts about it online, and some different things they talked about in Bible times especially. They said normally, whenever you cross the Jordan, you would find a place called a ford. And they said that was a place that was shallow enough that you could walk across or you could ride a animal across, such as a donkey, horse, I would assume, camel maybe, something that you could get across very easily. And they said the Jordan runs pretty swiftly. It's on a downhill course the whole way, so it runs pretty swiftly. And at this time, the Bible says that it was at a time whenever it was overflowing its banks. And they said, normally you don't ever try and cross it at this time whenever it was overflowing its banks. So those are very interesting things at the time that God moved Joshua and the Israelites to move the Israelites to cross the Jordan into Canaan, which Canaan we know is a symbol of the victorious Christian life. And a lot of times, people preach it as a place symbolizing heaven also, but it is a symbol of the victorious Christian life going across there, winning the battles. And of course, we know about Jericho as the first battle right across the river and what happened there. But the first thing that I want to point out, the very first point here, is the one that the Lord pointed out to me whenever I was listening to this read. And the leaders, the Levites, the leaders of the group, the priests, they had to get their feet wet so that the followers could cross on dry ground. And whenever I thought about that, I thought someone that was leading had to dip their foot. The Bible talks about that they had to, it says right here, dipped in the brim of the water. And I don't know about you, but if I was a priest and I was carrying the Ark of the Covenant of God. And yes, the Lord said, I mean, you got to understand that these men didn't see the Red Sea. God killed off all that generation because they weren't allowed to cross over into the Promised Land. So they haven't seen the Red Sea stand up on both sides and cross on dry ground. This is all new. And God told them, yeah, it's going to happen before that. If you look at the verses before, verse 13, and it shall come to pass as soon as the soles of the feet of the priests that bear the ark of the Lord of all the earth, shall rest in the waters of Jordan, that the waters of Jordan shall be cut off from the waters that come down from above, and they shall stand upon an heap. That takes a lot of faith. I mean, you got to understand that the priests, they're walking down towards the water. They're carrying the Ark of the Covenant, and they got to trust, okay, as soon as I step into this water, Lord, don't let a crocodile jump up and grab me, something crazy like that, that this is going to happen. And so there's a lot of faith and trust that God asked of them. And once again, could you imagine just walking down towards the water and just trusting God as a leader of the people, knowing that God better show himself through because I got all these people behind me and they're expecting something to happen. And they had to trust God that he would come through. And the main point after that is they had to stand firm in the Jordan. And this is where I'm going to spend a lot of time tonight. Of course, they had to get their feet wet first, but they had to stand firm. I want to take you to Numbers chapter 14. If you'll turn to Numbers chapter 14 with me. We'll start in verse 11. I'll wait for you to get there. This is the story of the 10 spies that were sent over. And as you know, there are 12 spies that were sent over, but the 10 spies brought back an evil report to the people. And they told them there are giants in the land and that the walls of the city were great and impenetrable, couldn't get to them. They were a strong people. And they discouraged the people. They stood up before the people. And you got to understand that these just weren't ordinary men. They were rulers among the people. They were leaders. I mean, that'd be like asking our leaders to go out and do something and expecting them to come back. They expect them to come back with a good report and then come back and discouraging everybody. They were rulers among the people. Verse 11 says, "And the Lord said unto Moses, how long will this people provoke me? And how long will it be ere they believe me? For all the signs which I have showed among them." And these men saw the Red Sea, the parting of the waters, the crossing of the waters. They're the ones, this is the generation that saw that. I mean, could you imagine being someone that saw such miracles? And not just that, seeing things after that God did for the Israelites and done for them themselves, and then to come back and to not trust God. Verse 29 and through 35, "Your carcasses shall fall in this wilderness, and all that were numbered of you, according to your whole number, from 20 years old and upward, which have murmured against me. Doubtless ye shall not come into the land concerning which I swear to make you dwell therein, save Caleb the son of Jephunneh, and Joshua the son of Nun. But your little ones, which he said should be a prey, them will I bring in, and they shall know the land which ye have despised. But as for you, your carcasses, they shall fall in this wilderness, and your children shall wander in the wilderness 40 years, and bear your whoredoms until your carcasses be wasted in the wilderness. After the number of days in which ye search the land, even 40 days, each day for a year, shall ye bear your iniquities, even 40 years, and ye shall know my breach of promise. I, the Lord, have said, I will surely do it unto all this evil congregation that are gathered together against me in this wilderness. They shall be consumed, and there they shall die." And if you read before that, God was just going to wipe the whole group of them out. He was so angry and so mad. God was just going to wipe everybody out. And Moses convinced, through prayer and begging of God, convinced God to have mercy. And as we all know, in our own lives, God has great mercy. And this is the judgment that God brought. So we see that the 10 spies at the very start didn't stand firm. They saw the crossing of the Red Sea. They saw the destruction of Pharaoh. They saw manna from heaven and the provision of God. And here we see their decision not only affected them, it affected many others. The decision of 10 men affected thousands. And they picked out 12 rulers among them, and 10 of them bringing back an evil report kept them from enjoying the benefits of what God had promised them, which was the promised land. Yeah, they would have to fight for it. Yeah, it was going to be a struggle. Yeah, it was going to be hard. But because they didn't stand firm then, they weren't allowed to see the promised land, and their ultimate punishment was death, dying in a wilderness where they wandered for 40 years. But later on, we see back in Joshua how God, Moses wasn't even allowed to go in because of the choice of them men also. And we see how great of a leader he was. The Lord brought him up on a mountain. He was allowed to see it with his eyes, but he was never allowed to step foot into it. But the main question I want to ask there is, who will be affected by your choice? From everybody. I mean, that goes for me, the choices I make. That goes for pastor. That goes for staff. That goes for Sunday school teachers. That goes for bus workers. That goes for our senior saints. That goes for teenagers. That goes for children. And one thing I wrote down here is there's a quote that I heard while I was at Bible college. It said, it was a man in Dr. Norris's church. He was just a layman in Dr. Norris's church. And he said one time, he said, "I work at the Ford Motor Company, but my business is serving the Lord." And I wrote that down in my Bible. I thought that was really good. And just deciding how the decisions that you make, how they affect others. I'll tell you something that whenever I really thought about what a decision would make and how would it affect those around me was my first year of Bible college, whenever Papal passed away. It was my spring semester, and it was tough. I mean, Papal was my hero. He's one I looked up to. You know, I just always thought he'd be there. You know, a lot of people, a buddy of mine actually just told me recently, he said, "You take a lot of things for granted until you lose it." And honestly, there were times while I was at college, I just didn't want to be there anymore. I just want to go home. I knew everyone was hurting at home. I knew I was hurting. I knew our family was hurting. I just wanted to be here. And that's all I wanted. I didn't care about college at the time. I didn't care about nothing. I just wanted to go home. I wanted to get away from what I wasn't familiar with, the city life and Lexington and that. I just wanted to get away from it, come home, and just enjoy home and help as much as I could. But honestly, I got thinking about it one day. The Lord really smote my heart for thinking so selfishly. I sat there one day, and the Lord wouldn't let me sleep one night for a while until he had done dealing with me with this. But he honestly told me, he brought the bus kids into my mind that I was working with at Commonwealth Baptist College in the church and the school church bus I was on at the time, Route 22. And I just started picturing the faces of each kid that was on that bus. And I got thinking, I said to my Lord, said to me, said, "John, if you go home and quit, what are the other workers going to say to this boy or that girl that's riding the bus and just say, well, where's Brother John at?" They're going to start asking questions. Of course, they're going to ask where you are because they love you just as much as you love them. And honestly, I thought, how many of them would be affected by me leaving Bible college that wouldn't come anymore? Not that I'm anything, but just seeing an inconsistency in a leader. Saying, "Well, Brother John's been here every week, where's he at now?" And them say, "Well, Brother John went home, he left Bible college." And then they start asking questions more and more. And then they're like, "Well, I don't got to go to church if Brother John isn't going to be here every week." And honestly, that's what the Lord dealt with in my heart. And it's not that I'm anything. I don't think that at all. But I thought that's what the Lord really dealt with me about in my decisions. And I always think of, it's actually my life verse now, 1 Corinthians 15:58. Most of you all know that verse, according as it was my papal's life verse too. And talks about being steadfast, unmovable, always abounding in the work of the Lord. For as much you know that your labor is not in vain in the Lord. And I got thinking about that too while I was writing this sermon. I got thinking about, what if Papaw wasn't steadfast? What if Pastor Ross wasn't steadfast? I mean, there's many of our senior saints in here too that I know, and many younger ones too, that were saved directly underneath Pastor Ross. I mean, if he hadn't been steadfast, where would you be at? And then you start thinking about after that, where would your kids be at if he hadn't been steadfast? And then you get thinking about, where would your grandchildren be at? And I started thinking about that. I was like, one choice by one person can affect so many when if they just don't stand firm. How many were affected that wouldn't get to see heaven if he hadn't stand firm? I mean, you think of the glory of salvation and the miracle of salvation and the miraculous thing that happens if someone hadn't stood firm. And the better question yet is not he did stand firm, is where will someone be if you don't stand firm? The third point tonight I want to say is standing firm isn't easy. I looked up some facts last night, and it's speculated just from the amount of gold that was used on the ark and how it was made, the size of it. It's all a speculation. But one guy had done a lot of the math through it, how much a shekel weighs, things like that, how much cubic feet there were, things like that. And he speculated that the ark weighs 183 pounds. To think that 183 pounds carried by four men, that'd be 46 pounds per man. And you think about the congregation of the Israelites, how many there were. Do you realize them four men had to walk down into, thankfully, dry ground. A lot of us have worked outside in mud before. When you get mud on your boots, it's hard to start moving. Your feet get a lot heavier, and things just get harder. So thankfully on dry ground, I'm sure. But you get thinking, them four men stood there, and they had to stand firm, the Bible says. That they stood firm down on dry ground. And the priests that bear the Ark of the Covenant of the Lord stood firm on dry ground in the midst of Jordan. And all the Israelites passed over on dry ground until all the people were passed clean over Jordan. And you think about, they were down there standing firm. And I wrote down this, I'm sure as the Israelites passed by because of a threat of a wall of water on both sides, I'm sure as they passed by, they're slapping them guys on the back saying, good job, guys, you're doing good. Good job. Keep it up, you know, because if they set that down, you know what's going to happen. Half of you is going to be on one side, half of you is going to be on the other, and whoever's in the middle, goodbye, you know. So I'm sure there was a lot of encouragement. I'm sure they were walking by saying, thank you, guys. Thank you for keeping it up. Thank you for standing firm. And I'm sure that, you know, at least that's what I would do if I was walking by them. If I was one of the Israelites, I walked by and I knew that the priests were going to walk down into the Jordan and they had to stand firm until we were all over. Yeah, I'd walk by and thank them too, say, you guys are doing good. I know that's hard, but thank you, you know. But I got thinking that a lot of times when God asks us to trust him, when God asks us to act in faith, that a lot of times you don't have a lot of cheering going on. You don't have a lot of people cheering you on and saying, good job, cheerleaders back in the background saying, good job, go, 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 you know. It just doesn't happen. I think about the Sunday school teacher that you have a rough day in Sunday school one week, and it seems like every single bad kid that can possibly be at school is there that week, and you're about to pull your hair out because you're dealing with them, you know. But they need it just as much as anybody else. I noticed that before. I've been teaching down at college, and I mean, there will be times when I'm done, and I'm like, nobody heard me at all. I mean, you're dealing with people the whole time, bad kids, everything. And honestly, them are the days that one of them will come up to me and say, that was a good message. Thank you. And I'm just like, you heard it? Really? Wow. Okay. Thank you. You know? And honestly, and then what even surprised you more is the one that was giving you trouble is the one that comes up to you and say, Brother John, thank you for that. I know I misbehaved some, but that was good. And you're just like, what? You know, and you just look, I'm like, really? But honestly, that's what happens a lot of time. Yes, But, you know, sometimes you get in them situations where sometimes you got to say something, or sometimes you got to do something, or you got to be somewhere where you don't have a lot of encouragement. Pastor Jerry was just talking to me about the gay rights thing and all that's going on in Indiana. Just last night we were talking about it some. I'm sure he don't have a lot of cheerleaders outside of here with some of the things that he's standing against. But we need him to stand firm. We need that beacon of light for someone to stand firm. And a lot of times the Lord asks us to do that. Flip over to Ephesians. We're going to go to chapter 6. I got the advantage. I got it marked. Chapter 6, verse 13 says, "Wherefore take unto you the whole armor of God, that you may be able to withstand in the evil day, and having done all, to stand." And there I just want to point out that the Lord wants us to do all to stand. Just like the spies, who will be affected if you don't stand? Going back to that, if you don't stand, who will be affected? Like the illustration in Luke, you don't have to turn there. Luke chapter 15, of course, is the parable of the lost son. We know that he demanded of his father to give him, "Give me the portion of goods that falleth to me." And he divided unto them his goods, his living. And after there, he'd spent it all in riotous living. But I want you to think about this. That lost son was down with the pigs, and talks that fain have filled his belly with the husks that the swine did eat, and no man gave unto him. He knew right then that he had a father that stood back home. He didn't know his father was still there, but he knew that he had grew up with a father that he knows that if he went back home, his dad would still be there. And think what would have happened if he hadn't have stood and he hadn't have been there. Where would that lost son have been? And I know it's a picture of you know, Jesus, whenever he used it for teaching, a picture of a lot of things. But just that thought of it, I heard it preached that way one time, was what would have happened if the would have went back and he wouldn't have stood. And his dad wouldn't have been there. I mean, what would have happened? What would have happened to him? And and he talked about the importance of standing firm where you're at. And we just know it's important to stand firm. If you don't stand firm, who will go astray? And I've already mentioned some of this: children, grandchildren, great-grandchildren. Will it stop? I mean, if you ask yourself that, I mean, great-grandchildren's a long, long ways, but will it go farther than that? I mean, honestly, if you don't stand, you could rob them of the greatest thing, and that's heaven. And that goes for your Sunday school kids, that goes for your bus kids, that goes for friends, that goes for your church family, that goes for your family, your personal family, that goes for those older than you, that goes for them younger than you. And honestly, I told Uncle Jerry this whenever I was in high school. I was the oldest for junior and senior year, and I wasn't the greatest example. Honestly, I wish I could go back. And I know I had guys that I looked up to whenever I was in junior high and elementary. I know Isaac was always there in school that was older than me. It was one of my buddies I always looked up to. Guys like that. We had Nathan around here, and we had Levi and Chad, and honestly, those were guys that I looked up to while we were at school. I mean, guys, all the older guys, and we just looked up. I mean, all of us did. It wasn't just me. I know everybody that was with me in school looked up to them. Whenever they were on Teen Sony and stuff, if they'd done something stupid, we'd try and do something stupid. If they'd done something that was good, we'd try and do something good. If it was bad, we'd try and do something bad. You know. And we just looked up to him. We did. And I always knew that there's people looking up to me. And I always tried to do the best I could. I know I didn't. But it doesn't matter how young you are. I mean, even whenever I was in sixth grade, I looked up to those older than me. But I'm sure there are younger ones that looked up to a sixth grader. I mean, you don't know nothing as a sixth grader, but they still look up to you because you're older than them, you know? And I knew that once I hit junior high that there's probably sixth graders that couldn't wait till they're in junior high that looked up to you. And as you got older and older and older, there's always someone looking up to you. And it doesn't just go for us that are older. It goes all the way to the youngest in here. I mean, there's always going to be someone looking up to you. You're a follower, but you're also a leader in some way, shape, or form. And it's important how you stand, because you always are a leader. I knew I wasn't going to be long tonight. I just want to recap towards the end here. Talked about the beginning. Sometimes you have to get your feet wet and trust God even when you don't see it. And that's hard. Sometimes it takes a little bit of doing. Nobody else got their feet wet besides the priest. Everybody else got to cross on dry ground. You must stand firm. Are you willing to get your feet wet to experience the victory? Of course, they're crossing over into Canaan. It's a picture of the victorious Christian life. In closing, I want to talk about just one illustration. And honestly, I got this from Pastor Fugit. I don't know where he got it from, but something that he used. And it's a story of a missionary and his wife. And they were going to be going to the mission field. And this was back in the older days when they had boats that just weren't as strong as we would say today. And back in the sailing days and wood boats. And the missionary and his wife were on one of these boats heading to, I believe it was Africa. And I think they were coming from England, if I remember correctly. I'm probably not telling the story directly on, but the illustration will get itself across. And as they're on this boat, there is a storm that arose. And it was tossing the boat left and right. And the boat was getting battered and beat. And they were throwing things overboard. Everyone was terrified on board. I mean, I could imagine how terrified they were. And the wife came to her husband, the missionary's wife, and started questioning why they were going. Why would God allow this to happen to them? You know, they're trying to do the right thing and go and be missionaries and tell other people about Jesus. Why would this be happening? Why would God be putting through this? And the husband pulled a knife out, and he held it up in front of his wife's face. And he asked her, he said, "Are you scared of this knife?" And she said, "Well, no." And he said, "Why not? This knife could kill you. It could take your life right now." He said, "Why aren't you scared of it?" And she said, "Well, because you're holding it, and I know you're not going to do anything." And he said, "God has the storm in his hand, and all he needs you to do is stand firm. No matter what happens, no matter what goes on in life, all God needs you to do is stand firm. You might have to get your feet wet, but just keep standing firm and keep going on." Let's bow our head and pray. Dear Jesus, thank you for another night we have, God, and thank you for all you've done, Lord. Thank you for helping me. God, ask, Lord, you just help us to stand firm through no matter what you put us through, no matter what you ask of us. Ask, Lord, you'd help us to have faith. In your name I pray. Amen.